This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Bombshell by C.D. Reese, performed by Andy Arndt and Christian Fox. For my daughter, if you want to know how incredibly smart, funny, warm, and beautiful you were as a little girl, read this book. It's a love letter to you. Chapter 1. Kara. Wipes. Please say you have wipes. Now. The two texts came rapid fire. Ding, ding, really loud in the waiting room. The walls, the floor, the ceiling, and the lighting were hard, cold white, and the sound bounced off them like a gong. The receptionist with the bun and black tailored jacket looked up at me disapprovingly. I made an "I'm sorry" face, then clicked off the sound. The five other well-groomed women in their 20s and 30s ignored me. What's happening? Where are you? Hallway ladies' room. Bring wipes. I'm out. Everything about the text was weird. Why was Blakely in the bathroom? She was supposed to be on the other side of the glass doors interviewing for a nanny job. I smiled at the receptionist as I walked out. She knew me. I'd worked with West Side nannies for years. I spoke French, navigated private school applications, wiped noses, helped with pre-calc homework, managed ancillary staff, and kept the little ones safe. My last job had ended amicably, but suddenly. My agent, Laura, shrugged it off and told me she could get me anything. So I made demands. I wouldn't work for absentee parents. No actors, no celebrities, no Hollywood hangers-on. Just vanilla rich. Or vanilla well-off. Glamour came at too high a price. A nanny didn't even have to sleep with a daddy to end up on the front page of some rag, and if there was anything that terrified me, it was seeing my face on the magazine racks at the grocery store checkout. In an hour, she found me something so perfect I nearly fell off my chair. Two gay bankers in Hancock Park. I'd met their son, had coffee at their house, and accepted an offer. I was at the office to sign the contract and keep Blakely company as she sat for her kid meet with a family who wouldn't give their name. Apparently, the meeting wasn't going well. I could hear the screams and cries of a child from down the hall. I knocked softly, and the door swung open. I got hit in the face with a wall of poop stink and the teary screams of a little girl. Blakely crouched on the tile, surrounded by a ring of white and brown streaked wads. The expensive toilet paper disintegrated when it was wet. Her hair had started falling out of her perfectly professional blonde chignon. She turned to me and stuck her hand out, snapping her fingers for the wipes. She was an actress first, nanny second. Taking care of Hollywood kids was easier than waitressing, paid very well, came with rent-free housing, and sometimes, if you were lucky, the schedule was flexible enough to audition. But she had a hard time finding work these days. Money was getting tight. Blakely had been my first friend in Los Angeles. We'd met at a birthday party, and she'd taken me under her wing. So when her name got dragged through the mud, I was the one to grocery shop for her so she could avoid seeing her distorted face at the checkout, and I was the one who defended her to the other caretakers at events. Now I was going to bring her wipes because it was the least I could do. The toilet seat was covered in brown streaks. The little girl standing by the throne, with her stained pants around her ankles, was crying so hard her face looked like a wet tomato. Blakely was holding a wet wad of toilet paper with her fingertips. The door clicked closed behind me. She wiped the little girl's tears with a disintegrating piece of toilet paper and gently shushed her. The shushing didn't quiet her. I handed my friend the wipes and wet some overpriced hand towels so I could wipe down the poop. "It's all right," she said in a gentle but firm nanny voice. "We're going to get you cleaned up in a jiff." Blakely stood, fell halfway out of her pump, and skidded on a soggy wad of toilet paper and poo, landing on her butt. The little girl went from big fat tear weeping to screaming in terror. I stepped over Blakely and kneeled in front of the little girl. I felt my chest expand as soon as I looked at her. My heart swelled and broke a bit. I'd do or say whatever I had to soothe her. "Are you all right?" I asked Blakely in a sing-song so the little girl wouldn't get upset. "I think I fell in poop," Blakely said from behind me. "Yuck, I did." I turned back to the little one. "Hi," I said, hoping she'd hear me through her wailing. "My name is Kara. What's yours?" Blakely interrupted. "Nicole, it's... How old are you?" I asked. She snarfled, making a massive effort to get herself together. I'd seen men dig ditches with less struggle. "Good kid." Blakely broke in. "Brad Sinclair's daughter." Talk about grocery store fodder. The A-list Oscar nominee had a 5-year-old from a short fling dumped on his doorstep a week earlier. If I were this kid, I'd shit myself too.
"Five,"
the little girl spit out.
"Five?"
I acted surprised and impressed. The fact was, Brad Sinclair's bodyguards were going to bust in here in a minute and arrest both of us. This girl needed to calm down.
"So big! Wow!"
I snapped a few wipes from the dispenser and handed them to her. "Do you want to wipe your eyes, or can I do it?"
"You,"
she sniffled. I patted her cheeks. News of her had been all over the internet. Notorious Hollywood playboy Brad Sinclair had knocked up a girl 6 years before when he was working in a little crystal store in Venice Beach, right after he got cast in his career-making role. She'd put his name on the birth certificate but never told him. When she died in a freeway accident, the state contacted him. DMZ got wind of it, and no one had been able to talk about anything else for a week.
"Are you feeling sick in your belly?" I asked.
She nodded.
"And your head?"
"It hurts right here."
She put her hand on the front of her head and moved it back. Top of the head, not neck. That was good.
"And it smells really bad in here."
Her face screwed up. She was about to cry again. "You're right," I said. "It does. Should we clean up a little?"
"Yes, please."
The mother, whoever she was, had raised her well so far. Blakely cut in. "I have an audition in an hour." She tossed the wad of paper in the toilet. "You smell like a colon." I looked at my watch. "And you don't have time to get home and shower." I pointed to the seat and addressed the little girl.
"Hey, great job cleaning up. My name is Kara. Do you want to tell me your name?"
She shook her head. Her face had gone from red to pink to normal, revealing brown eyes big as cups of black coffee and thin eyebrows. Her coloring was nothing like Sinclair's, but the lines and planes of her face were so similar, she could have been his clone.
"That's all right. You don't have to tell me. Let me see what we have back here."
She bent over in the shameless way of children so I could see that the backs of her thighs were covered in brown stink.
"Not so bad," I said. "Blakely, can you toss these and grab me a fresh one?"
I handed her the wad, keeping my eyes on the child.
"This is a nice shirt. Who is this?"
I pointed to a pink horse with kitten ears.
"Pony Pie. Her nature symbol is joy."
"We could use some of that."
"We could," Blakely said, handing me a wipe. "But this sweetheart really is a joy. Just having a hard day."
She leaned forward to make eye contact with the girl and winked. Nicole wiped her nose with her sleeve.
"I agree," I said. I got to work on the girl's bottom while Blakely wiped down the bathroom. Blakely whispered, "I'll never make it home to shower and get to Culver City and..."
She gulped her words back when there was a hard knock at the door.
"Blakely Anderson,"
a male voice barked from the other side. My friend and I looked at each other.
"We're in here,"
I called. A key slipped in the lock and the door slapped open, revealing two huge guys in dark shirts with radios squawking. The little one started screaming again, stamping her feet in poop streaks.
"Close the door! Close the door! Close the door!"
she shrieked. Blakely threw her hands up.
The guys came for the girl, who was getting more upset by the millisecond. What I should have done was step back and let them take her, shit stains and all. I would have had far less trouble, but I didn't have time to think it through. The bathroom was small, the guys were big, and the girl sounded irrevocably hurt and upset. I didn't have cerebral cortex time, only lizard brain time. I stood up with my hands out. Stop! They stopped. I had 3 seconds to talk over her screams. This little girl is upset because she's dirty. You two taking her out of here like this is going to make it worse, so... My 3 seconds were up. Guy number one pushed me out of the way, while guy number two picked her up under the arms, just as she kicked off her stained pants, shoe landing in filth, ear-splitting screams. Blakely stood in the hall feverishly talking to someone. My heart fell apart for the little stinker.
Whoa, whoa,
a male voice echoed above the din.
Can we all chill out for a second?
Everyone froze except the child, who was upset past obedience. In the doorway stood my agent, Laura, and Brad Sinclair, but honestly, Laura was a footnote to his presence. We all were. I was used to celebrities and actors. Star power had no effect on me anymore. But he was different. Burgundy button-down and jeans, blue eyes, and brown hair that needed a brush. 6'2"-ish. A jawline that may or may not have been geometrically possible. Sure, those were all words that described what I saw, and I could have come up with 100 more the next day. But at that moment, with his shoulders filling the doorframe and Laura behind him, clutching a folder, he wasn't just a collection of perfectly fine features. He was action and motion. He projected himself outward, emanating heat. My ears turned red. Half a second turned to minutes. He was the hurricane and the eye of it, a constellation of angles and planes that curled around the world and complemented it. Get a hold of yourself. He was just stunning. One of 1,000 like him. Maybe 100. 12. Fine. You could count the number of men that gorgeous on 1 finger. Mr. Sinclair, I said, giving him my most authoritative tone. There's no way out of here besides that door. I'm not going to take her. Just let me clean her up and bring her back.
Who are you?
I had to shout over the nonstop loop of the girl's screams. My name is Kara Dumont. I was nanny to Ray Haywood's kids. He knew Ray. Everyone knew Ray. Brad looked me up and down as if taking stock of my soul. I continued, I'm not here for the job, but she's upset. I'm fingerprinted and background checked, and I'm not afraid of a little poop on the floor. Brad looked at his daughter, the guys in the dark shirts, Laura, and then me, eye to eye. A man who projected star power like a lighthouse, but for the moment he was just a guy totally out of his depth.
Okay, thank you.
I reached for the child, and she fell into my arms. The screaming slowed as soon as I bore the full weight of her, and stopped completely when she was on a clean part of the floor. I addressed my agent. Can you grab some underpants and have housekeeping bring some towels? She nodded. The security detail backed out, and Brad Sinclair gave me one look, one burning look that took the breath out of me before I closed the bathroom door and kneeled down to face his daughter. Do you want to start over? I asked the little girl. Okay. My name is Kara. It's nice to meet you. What's your name?
Nicole Garcia.
She sniffed and wiped her nose on her sleeve. Nice to meet you, Nicole. Want to help clean this up?
Can we do my butt first?
Great idea. I liked this little one. Good thing I already had a job lined up, or I could have fallen for her and her dad in a heartbeat.
Chapter 2. Brad. Buck up, son. Not a man born is ready for fatherhood when it comes. Best to just set yourself to getting it done. My dad had a fucking positive attitude. Better than any of the fruits and nuts of Los Angeles with their pet therapists and white smiles. I grew up with stop your bitching and get in the kitchen. I had no idea what the kitchen had to do with anything, but it was a good, solid Southernism, one of many he launched like rockets right in front of the entire staff of West Side Nannies, as if he didn't know I was a fucking superstar. Dad had had his share of surprises, including knocking up Mom when they were dating for a week. He just put on his grown-up boots and started walking. And when he lost two fingers, pinky and fourth, on his right hand to a circular saw at Redfield Lumber, he had it sewn up and went to work 2 days later. There was no patience in the Sinclair family for whining, bitching, or moaning. Slap a smile on your face and put your head down to work. Like, when your son discovers he's a father, you get on a plane within the hour and haul ass to Los Angeles. My parents were here so fast, I barely had time to get my people in to clean the house. I met Nicole at Protective Services after the DNA test was positive. She was crying. She was always crying. She was a bag of flesh, bones, and tears. I was sure she was cute. 100% sure, but her mom had died while Nicole was reading, I confirmed, actually reading, in kindergarten, and here she was, as if picked up and thrown over the fence with no way to get back in. I'd cry too. The only time she wasn't crying, or almost crying, or breathing between sobs, was at West Side Nanny's, in the bathroom behind a closed door. I told Laura there was no way she was in there because I didn't hear sobbing, but, lo and behold, Nicole was in there, not crying even though she was stick-dipped in her own feces. It wasn't because she was sick of crying. It was because of the woman with the snotty tissue and the rock-steady mood-ring eyes. The nanny, who was, I was told, unavailable. Laura said. My dad grumbled disapproval, and my mother tisked. They were really messing with my mojo. I couldn't be a celebrity and that no-good Sinclair boy who spilled paint on my lawn now who's gonna pay for that at the same time. What's that mean? I objected. She's in the bathroom, cleaning her up as we speak. What's she doing tomorrow or the next day?
We just signed her to a family full-time. We'll find you someone, Mr. Sin-
I don't know if you know this, miss, but I don't take no for an answer. That one in the bathroom is the one I want. She's the only one who's been able to stop that little girl from crying since she landed in my hands a week ago. I'd never wanted a woman so badly in my life. And though she was definitely hot, my dick wasn't even involved. I was going to have her. I needed her. 2 weeks earlier, I'd been 24 hours into the most epic party of my life. My house was upside down, populated with a few hundred friends and a dozen security guys. Chill out, Gene, I said over the music, walking away from him. No one walked away from Super Agent Gene Testarossa, except me. This is the same runaround as that girl last March. The one who said you gave her herpes? Yeah, that one. You gave her herpes, I spun on him. I poked at his Hugo Boss jacket with the beer bottle swinging between my thumb and the jabbing finger. The other girl gave her herpes, and it was oral herpes. I was clean. I'm still clean. He shook his fat, pink-gold watch until he could see the face. Ken's on his way, he mumbled. Ken Brack. Damn. I couldn't turn my back on my PR guy as easily as I turned my back on my agent. I walked out to the pool. Everyone was dressed for summer except Gene, who always looked like a Wall Street banker. I have a month and a half off to do nothing but sit in this house and do what I want. I scheduled it. I made it happen. Moved heaven and earth. The mountain came to fucking Muhammad. And you're crashing it with what? Who? A girl named Brenda? Brenda? Look, she died in a car accident 2 weeks ago, and I came here as soon as I knew. Don't give me a hard time. If you're the father, you're the father. I always use a condom. You sure? Because that's something I'd forget? 6 years ago? When you got that little horror movie and you were over the fucking moon because you were a nobody working in a crystal store? Yeah. You'd forget. This is serious. A voice came from behind me. I spun around. Ken! I hugged him. When I signed with him, I knew I'd made it as an actor.
I had a career to spin.
Boom! I partied harder that night than when I was nominated for an Oscar, which was cool, but too surreal to drink over. Can you put pants on? He said. I was in a dress shirt with a towel around my waist. I had no recollection of how I'd gotten that way. Hey, it's a party. I don't like feeling restrained. Crotches restrain me. You have a lot more to worry about than your pants. Is it the Brenda thing? Brenda isn't a problem, and she never was. This is deep and wide, Sinclair. My agent was a douchebag, but my PR guy was the real deal. So when he walked back into my house, I followed. The party had drifted into all four bedrooms, living room, office, den, billiards room. in the whatever room that I never figured out what to do with. We ended up in the laundry room. I hadn't even known I had a laundry room. Mom would be proud. Jean had shuffled in. Ken closed the doors, then leaned on the washer and crossed his arms. Brenda Garcia, remember anything about her? The question wasn't rhetorical, he was actually asking. No. You worked with her at a crystal store. I remember the store. Fine. He moved off the washer and stood on his own feet, as if changing gears. I'm not asking you to remember her or her daughter, it's irrelevant. I'm sure she was on a brain cell you killed already. My brain is fine. I sounded defensive. Too many beers, or too few. Right, whatever, I don't care. You know what I care about? I care about what people think of you. I took a mouthful of beer. Outside, someone was thrown into the pool. A woman, judging from the squeals. He might care what people thought of me, but I sure didn't. Now, Ken said. I listened to his voice, but not the words. What if I did have a kid? That made me a father. I'd played a father in Verity, but that was different than being a father, right? I mean, it takes a ton of time. And time was one thing I didn't have a hell of a lot of. What are you saying? I asked. Ken sighed and pulled a yellow 4x6 envelope out of the breast pocket of his jacket. He opened it by pinching the edges. DMZ already found out by following the child protection agent into Jean's office and sitting next to her in the waiting room. Not my fault, Jean mumbled. Ken continued. Then they sent a middle-aged female reporter into the CPS office to pose as Brenda Garcia's aunt, apropos of nothing, because this is still real. He took a picture out of the envelope. It was a school photo of a girl, maybe 5, 6, 4. Who the fuck even knew? What was the age of maximum cuteness? Because that was how old she was. She had brown hair and huge, dark brown eyes, big smile surrounded by dimples. Nose like a bell pepper. I had blue eyes and light brown hair, but despite that, the part of my brain that recognized faces calculated a visual equation and recognized hers. My mother's eyes, my sister's curls, my dad's chin. Me. She looked exactly like me. Oh, shit, I said. No, 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 no. I wrap it up, Ken. You have to believe me.
Okay, I don't know when you're going to get this through your head, he said. It doesn't matter what I believe. It matters what the public believes. I have your clone right here.
He held out the picture. The more I looked at it, the more it sunk in. She was mine.
And Ms. Garcia put your name on the birth certificate as the father.
Fucking bitch.
You will speak of her with respect from this moment on, Ken roared. First, because she's dead, and people do not like it when you speak ill of the dead. Second, she bore you a daughter and hasn't gone public. She was a single mom working behind a counter at the coffee chain. People are going to be on her side.
He was right. My mother raised me better than that. You don't speak ill of the dead or insult a woman. You don't give anyone a reason to think less of you. I tried to hear my mother's voice in my head, but it was hard to hear without also tasting her biscuits and gravy, with corn and butter and the smell of barbecue. Yeah, Dad wouldn't get mad at the messenger. Dad wouldn't turn his back. Dad would be Mr. C3, cool, calm, collected. Okay, I was good. I had this. I had to just breathe in, man up, breathe out.
Where is she now? I asked. The kid. Her name is Nicole, and she's in foster care. Now, here's what you're going to do before this explodes. One, you're taking a DNA test. Two, if she's not yours, you set her up a college fund anyway.
What if she is mine?
I light you a cigar and set you up with a staff, because you're not ditching her. It's too late for that. You're not ditching her, and you're showing up in Thailand on set for Bangkok Brotherhood like nothing happened. How's he gonna...
Jean didn't get a chance to finish his sentence before Ken interrupted.
He has no choice. If he bails on that shoot, he's never going to work again. And he has a kid to support now.
He turned back to me.
Private school's no joke. You need the money. Staff up. You can't miss a single rehearsal, or you'll be back in Arkansas. It doesn't matter how famous you think you are, you can disappear. And if you're not on set in Thailand on schedule, you will disappear. Poof.
He kissed the tips of his fingers and spread them out.
I didn't want to disappear. Not back to Redfield. I'd work too hard.
I got this. Jean made a huffing noise that was long on disbelief and short on actual humor.
What, asshole? I asked him. You? Man, this is a fucking disaster. What are you going to do with a kid? You're not even wearing pants.
You,
I poked him in the chest. Need to have a little faith, my friend. I brushed past him to walk out, taking a swig from my beer bottle. It tasted like piss. I stepped on a pair of panties. I had no idea who they belonged to. Shit. What the hell was I going to do? I traveled like Marco fucking Polo and worked like a dog. I partied like it was my job because my job didn't leave me too much time to party. And I was going to add a kid to the mix? What the fuck was I going to do? Jean didn't need to have a little faith. I did. I was going to have to fake it until I made it. Act like I thought dads should act. Do all the things until they came naturally. I didn't know what the things were, but it wasn't like I was inventing anything, right? The hot nanny in the bathroom had a gift, and I needed it. Nicole had cried when she met my friend Mike's kids. She cried in my mother's lap, sobbed when Mom bought her the sneakers with the toes that lit up whenever she walked, ran, stepped, or jumped. She even cried in her sleep. I thought a little help was all I needed. Mike had given me the number at Westside Nanny's. I held the card like a fucking magic sword, but I left there no better off than I had arrived. On the way out from the bathroom incident, an insane pack of paparazzi had found the back door where the limo was parked. And by insane, I mean they were more aggressive than I'd ever seen in my life. I swore their lives depended on getting a picture of Nicole. One of them held his camera in front of her and flashed it in her face. She cried. Of course, she cried. I would have cried too. I grabbed for the camera and missed because my dad held me back. Good thing. I was just about ready to peel that guy's skin off his skull. In the back of the limo, Nicole wouldn't look at me. Too busy crying. The only time she'd stopped crying was for the hot nanny. My mom sat across from Dad and me with Nicole on her lap.
Hard to miss her with those shoes, Dad grumbled.
They're fine, I said. You tell her no after what happened, Mom huffed at Dad. What do they want? Nicole asked. Just a picture, Mom said, stroking her hair.
They want a broken face, I said.
Hush, Mom made her stern face. I'm scared, Nicole sobbed.
I sat back in the seat and covered my face. I could smell the bathroom soap on my hands. Jesus Christ. Acting like I had this under control wasn't working. We should be home.
Dad laid down the law, pointing at me with his three-fingered hand.
She needs family, not staff.
We'll do the interviews at the house from now on. I moved my hands away. Nicole was looking at me as if trying to figure out who was in charge.
Too bad I had no idea either. My act was falling apart from the inside out. A man needs to raise his own children, Dad declared. You Hollywood types delegate the important things and attend the nonsense personally.
Well, it's the circumstances, Milton. The girl was limp in Mom's arms, head on shoulder, watching Sunset Boulevard pass by.
They're not normal. The hell they're not.
Don't say a bad word, Nicole said, tears slowing down to little sobs.
Dad huffed and crossed his arms.
Is the lady coming home with us? She asked, picking her head up as if her head was clear for the first time. Which lady, sweetheart?
Kid talk still felt weird in my mouth.
The bathroom lady with the black hair.
What was I supposed to tell her? For the first time since she'd come home with me, she wasn't crying. She looked hopeful, like clouds parted at the mention of the bathroom lady or something.
Maybe. Don't say maybe, say yes or no.
I don't know.
Yes or no? Yes, 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 she shouted, and I could feel the tears coming. I'll try. No, maybe. Yes or no?
Yes, okay, yes.
Nicole nodded, as if telling herself it was true.
I'd said yes. Then she rested her head on my mother's shoulder again. Next to me, my father covered his eyes and shook his head.
Chapter 3. Kara. The morning after we met Brad Sinclair, he was still embedded in my mind. I couldn't get away from thinking about him in that bathroom doorway. He was a dude, a party animal, a fuck around. I don't think I'm getting a call back, Blakely said as we climbed a particularly dusty incline on Griffith Park. I was 10 minutes late. But you smelled nice. She shook her head, swinging her ponytail back and forth. Can't film a smell, but the face? She drew her hand over her face, as if she were on the floor at the Los Angeles Auto Show. This face is instantly recognizable as the woman stupid enough to fall for Josh Trudeau. Everyone forgot that. I was lying. No one forgot it. She'd forever be the face of a nanny who fell for a daddy. Fresh from the supermarket head cap. And I don't think I got the Sinclair job either, she said after swigging from her bottle. Which, maybe it's a good thing. It had started getting hot earlier in the day, so Blakely and I wanted to finish the hike up the hill by 9 a.m. The mountain sloped and curved up to Dante's Peak, a copse of trees smoked out but not destroyed in the 2008 fires. It's kind of a disaster, I said. The surprise kid? Nothing good can come of it. You can tell he's trying, though. He has no choice. And what they say about him? I said between gasps for oxygen, continuing as if I hadn't heard her. All true. It's like so raw, the presence. I thought he was shorter. Blakely sucked on her water bottle. Her blonde ponytail swung behind her. She looked gorgeous even after 2 miles uphill. My bangs were plastered to my forehead and my eyes were wet from the dust. Too good-looking to work for, I said, getting out of the way of a woman in a tight leotard and her dog. And straight. Too straight.
I know. And inexperienced. He'd probably think he was entitled to it.
Too risky. I pity the girl he hires. I shook my head. Brad Sinclair was a tabloid headline waiting to happen.
I hope you get to pity me. I need the money.
I nodded. He wasn't going to hire her. He'd get talked out of it by anyone who cared about his reputation. After her affair with Josh Trudeau, she became the nanny equivalent of box office poison. The rumor mill never stopped churning. Raymond, my last boss, had cut me loose before the rumor mill had a chance to churn. We hadn't done anything, but when he got engaged to Kendall, she wasted no time turning me into a problem. Executive powers came with the engagement ring. Her first order was that the other pretty woman in the house had to go. I was young and cute, and you don't bring a time bomb into your home. And that's exactly what a celebrity nanny is. Not only is she attractive, but she's great with the kids. She does all the things the dad associated with his normal upbringing, which is likely the upbringing he promised himself he was going to give his children. The nanny represents that failed promise. She kisses boo-boos, packs lunches, cooks what the children like, and sits to eat with them. His wife is usually in the business as well, and travels, works all hours, and manages a business team as well as the household team. She represents all the dad's failures as a father, because she's juggling everything but the children. There were plenty of men who didn't fall for the high-priced, educated, young, beautiful nanny, but there were plenty who did. You could read all about them while your food was on the conveyor belt at the grocery store. It happened so often, it was surprising when it didn't. Despite Raymond's numerous failings as a father and human being, he never hit on me. He never even looked at me cockeyed. I appreciated that, and as time went on, I took it for granted. He was based in Los Angeles because he owned a conglomerate of internet and paper tabloids that fed off the very people he called friends. But because he wasn't a celebrity himself, I could get him when the kids needed him. He respected what I did, and I loved Willow and Jedi. You had such a sweet deal with Raymond Haywood, Blakely said, voice rising and falling with her gait. Yeah, I guess. But two gay bankers? This new family is even better. They aren't interested in seducing women. They have no travel schedules. There are no paparazzi out front. Yeah, you lucked out. She said it ruefully, and I understood why. She'd been caught with Josh Trudeau by his wife. Marcia Trudeau had recorded them from the bedroom closet and posted the video on YouTube. It was a mess. Blakely's career came to an abrupt halt, but the damage to her heart was worse. She didn't know he was a serial cheater. She'd confused a busy husband and wife with a failing marriage. She'd believed everything Josh had said and let herself fall in love. He was never going to leave his wife. They rarely do. She got an apartment and didn't leave it for months. She worked as a dog walker and house sitter. She changed the name on her headshot to Sarah Colt and started over. Sometimes when she went on auditions, she wasn't recognized and got a call back. Sometimes it wasn't that easy. I thought about her a lot, because what happened to her terrified me. I didn't want it. Anything but that. People looking at a picture and deciding I was a whore. Strangers making a judgment about me. My blood turned to ice whenever I imagined it. I heard Ray and Kendall went back to Westside and asked for a woman in her 50s. When Ray Haywood let me go, I moved in with Blakely. Her job prospects hadn't improved, but she could do her own shopping and seemed to be moving on. Menopausal women are the horniest, Blakely said, and Westside doesn't do unattractive or older, sorry to say. An old Korean couple in plaid golf visors waved and smiled. Ruefully, Blakely continued, I wish I could just change my face sometimes. My phone chimed. Speak of the devil. My agent. Hi, I said, while Blakely polished off her water. Laura sounded businesslike and positive when she delivered bad news. Matt and Dom fell through. What? Sorry, Kara. It wasn't you. What do you mean it wasn't me? I felt the world shifting under my feet. They love you. They just decided they wanted someone who speaks Spanish. I speak French. What's wrong with French? Willow Haywood is fluent because of me. Did you tell them that? I'm sorry, Kara. We can send you out again. You're easy to place. I wanted to throw the phone. Instead, I just hung it up. Blakely had heard everything. She put her hand on my back. You'll find something. Sure. I'll get hired and go in like a little puppy, all tail wagging and wanting to do a good job. Then one of two things will happen. No, three things. He'll look at me like I hold the keys to the life he wanted and missed, and I'll quit before I ruin their marriage. I counted off a second finger. Or the lady of the house will start snapping at me every time he's in the room. Or I'll hit the lottery and get a single mom who won't fire me until she gets a serious boyfriend. Then I'm out. And it's not fair, because they only want pretty nannies. Having their kids toted around by someone unattractive or middle-aged is like a black mark on their records. And we're like inanimate household accessories until the person in the house with a dick feels sad or lonely. Wow, you need some ice cream. I was frustrated and disappointed. I also had no business complaining about any of this to Blakely, who had it 10 times worse. I'm sorry, I said. You were just speaking my mind. Let's go down to Cups and Cones, I said. I'm buying. Chapter 4. Kara. Things work out the way they do for a reason. Sometimes the reason is that the universe wants to screw you. For fun, maybe. Or because you getting screwed is in service of someone else's, things happen for a reason. But the reason isn't always rainbows and unicorns. When my parents got reassigned to Paris, the reason was so I could learn French, and when it was Pakistan, it was so I could stay in the house all the time, and when it was Korea, it was so I could fall in love with a boy named Shin, who clumsily took my virginity 2 weeks before we had to move again. When the American school in Stuttgart was full, Dennis and I went to Lycée Français and stayed. The universe must have wanted our lessons to be rigorous and consistent no matter where we were. Certainly, Dad didn't mind that we were taught to always just be polite, deferential to authority, and keep our noses clean. But by 14, nothing about me was clean. It's true. Sometimes things happen for a reason. And sometimes the reasons suck. Moving around that much meant I didn't have a chance to fall in love. And if I couldn't fall in love, I was just going to let my body have a party. Free birth control in Belgium and not being anywhere long enough to get a reputation meant I could do what I wanted. I just had to make sure I kept away from other girls' boyfriends and stuck to guys who didn't talk so much. When I was 17, I cost my father his security clearance. I was caught in a car on a desolate Scottish road with a rugby player. People talked. My parents, who kept their noses so clean they glowed, asked for a transfer so we could start from scratch yet again. We went back to the States in deadly, tense silence. After that, I felt as if I couldn't do anything right. My parents made me nervous. My father in particular always seemed to look at me sideways, as if he was looking for me to get into some kind of trouble. Once we settled in Texas, I had a habit of not disclosing any information about anything. I got into and out of minor scrapes by being straightforward and respectful at the same time. I adapted easily to new situations and watched how other people behaved before I acted. I was a natural diplomat. My peers and their parents may have been right. I might have been cold. I might have been unemotional. People and their judgments scared me. I was only really myself around children. I went to college for child development and took on a teaching position for about 5 minutes before I was offered a ton of money to watch Jude and Karen McVino's twin toddlers while they shot a movie in Austin. When they went back to Hollywood, I went with them. I said goodbye to my parents. They got stationed in Argentina while I was gone, and after a few phone calls, it got too easy to stop talking to them. Then it got hard to pick up the phone. I was fine. I felt like I had a new family because those kids set a light off in my soul. Not every child I've watched did that. I've loved them all, even the most rotten and entitled kids in town, but a few were exceptional. "Brad Sinclair wants to meet with you," Laura said on a call the day after the Griffith Park hike. Blakely and I were on the balcony of her cheap Los Feliz rental. She had a beer and a magazine. I had a book and a bottle of water. "He's too famous." "I told him you'd say that." "Do you have anything coming up? Isn't Ken Brock's wife pregnant?" "3 months. You might want to meet with Brad for a consultation. The poor guy's confused as hell, and his parents are going back to Arkansas soon." "Tell him how to parent? That never goes well." "Just go meet him," Laura said. "As a favor to me. It'll look good for the agency." "For you," I said. We said our goodbyes and hung up. Blakely put her foot on the railing. Her big toe poked out of her sock, and the brand of beer she was drinking was $1 a can. When I opened the screen door, she held the magazine up. "What do you think of her nose?" I looked at the picture of Frida Julian. "Looks like a nose." "It used to be huge. I was in acting school with her. Total honker. And she was stunning, even with that thing on her face." "You have a nice nose," I sat on the chair next to her. "Yeah, but if it were bigger, that would be all people would see. I'd be unrecognizable." I didn't feed further into her fantasy. I had to figure out if I wanted to step into Brad Sinclair's life. Maybe she was stunning because of it. Blakely considered this more to herself than me. I wasn't even in the room anymore. She needed something to do besides worry and wonder. If she could just get a job, she'd be all right. I decided to see Sinclair. At the very least, maybe I could help out Blakely. Chapter 5. Kara. The house was ginormous. The kind of house you got just because you could. Everything about this stank to high heaven. Everything about Brad Sinclair was wrong. From his travel schedule, to the way he partied, to the number of women he reportedly bedded weekly. A guy in a white shirt and black jacket opened the car door. Probably a driver on staff. That was a good sign. But as signs went, the yellow Maserati with the scratched bumper parked by the garage wasn't as good. "Thank you," I said, handing him my keys. I'd been briefed on how well-staffed Brad Sinclair was, so the house valet didn't surprise me. The guard at the gate didn't surprise me. The catering truck behind the house was likely some celebrity chef who kept the fridge and pantry stocked when the celebrity in question was home. Which wasn't as often as people thought. I'd traveled with the McVinos, and the life they led was unfriendly to keeping a house, a family, or a routine. Unless they took their entire staff with them, a working actor or director spent weeks at a time eating in hotels in the middle of the night after a 15-hour day. They picked what they could off craft services tables, and if the film didn't have a huge budget, the only options on the table were fat, sugar, and salt. Uncomfortable costumes, exposure to weather, long hours, tons of waiting. I'd need a staff when I was home, too. The front door opened. I expected a housekeeper or butler, but it was the actor himself. I hadn't forgotten how beautiful he was. I'd just chosen not to think about it.
"Ma'am," he said.
Southern boy. Parents together. Christian elementary. Public secondary. 2 years at USC Drama. Dates his co-stars for a month after the rap party, then moves on. Pouring through the trades and making calls, I'd discovered he'd spend at least 8 of the next 12 months overseas doing action movies, but most had post-production in town. "Mr. Sinclair," I said, holding my hand out. "Nice to see you outside a bathroom." He shook my hand. I'd shaken plenty of famous hands attached to gorgeous men, but my imagination was sparked by the way his fingers slid against mine to grasp them and the way our palms pressed together. My mind clouded over with ripped sheets, hard muscles, and soft skin.
"Pleasure's mine," he said,
and my brain skipped like a trip on a cracked sidewalk over the word pleasure. He didn't give me the over-sincere hand-over clasp to show me how damn happy he was to see me, but there was something intimate about that half a second. Just a consultation. I followed him into the house. Dora Donovan had designed it. Looked like her with her faux mid-century white couch and shag rug. That wasn't going to work with playdates unless he wanted to keep an upholsterer on staff. We went through the living room to a smaller room with a pool table smack in the middle. It had a stained glass Budweiser lamp over it and was racked for 9-ball. Dora Donovan had nothing to do with this room, for sure.
"Wanna sit?"
He held a chair out for me. The glass-top table was just inside the open patio doors and was set with iced tea. I sat. "I'm not a date," I said kindly, indicating the iced tea setup. "Just so you know, you don't have to do things like hold the chair for me."
"Habit, I guess."
He sat opposite me. "Chivalry is nice, but with the nanny, whomever you hire, it can be misconstrued." He smirked a little, as if misconstruing his own thoughts. I cleared my throat and pulled my jacket closed. "Where's Nicole?" I picked up the pitcher and poured him some.
"My parents took her to the park. She made the tea. My mother, I mean."
"I hear they're not staying?"
"No."
"And how is she?"
"My mother?"
"Your daughter?" He took a second to look out the doorway into the blazing sunset, then at his tea. He shook the ice down.
"I have no clue."
His honesty was refreshing. He earned my attention and respect with those 4 words. He looked at the table, then up at me. The camera always caught his little imperfections, the scar on his forehead, the slightly crooked nose. In person, they were tangible indicators of his charisma and were powerful reminders of the flawlessness of the rest of him. "Laura said you have a photo shoot set up for you and Nicole with Vanity Fair."
"Yeah, so?"
"You need the money?"
"It's going to charity. A dyslexia fund. My sister has it, so."
"Cancel it." I looked right at him. Didn't flinch. Didn't melt, even though I wanted to. He knew I was right. In the millisecond pause and the way he broke his gaze, I knew I didn't have to explain myself.
"Will do."
His voice was low and husky, like a growl turned down to 1. As if he wanted to yell about not telling him what to do, but knew better. I could just about see the string he was tied together with. "I think she needs as much consistency as you can manage. She was taking gymnastics. You should get her into classes."
"I can do that."
"Have you found a school for her?" He took a sip of tea, then jerked his thumb southward.
"There's one down the valley side."
"Lawrence?"
"Yeah. There's another one on Wilshire. The public school's on Franklin."
He shrugged.
"Summer just started. We have a few months."
He wasn't prepared for this. Not even a little. Neither was I, because he seemed so vulnerable behind the cocky veneer that I wanted to help him, and that was the first sign I should run away. I was there as a consultant, so I was going to consult. "Nicole is a very together little girl. and I think under normal circumstances she'd thrive in a tough, competitive school environment.
She's going into first grade.
It's also Los Angeles. It's a town of self-made strivers and their children, so kindergarten is the entry year. It's very hard to get a kid into first grade, even one as mature as Nicole. There's just no space.
She's mature. She can read, right? It's amazing.
He beamed. I wanted to smile, but I couldn't be delighted for him. That was inappropriate. I know I saw her in tears, but once she calmed down, she followed instructions and spoke clearly. She has great fine motor skills, and when she cleans a shit stain, she gets every speck off. At her age and what she's been through, you're right. That's pretty amazing. Flattering the child was a sure way to get the job, and even though I wasn't interested in working for him, per se, seeing him beam like a proud parent gave me hope for him.
We had her reading tested. She's perfect.
He was really stuck on the reading. Most kids could read by the time they entered first grade, but he seemed happy in his bubble. I didn't want to pop it.
She's doing great, I continued, trying to focus on Nicole and not the way his hand curved around his iced tea.
There's a school in Santa Monica called Crossroads. It's a great school, academically, but one of their core directives is the emotional health of the student. They have a grade-bearing course that focuses on each child's emotions. He smiled that award-winning smile.
Ma'am, I'm from the South. That hippy-dippy shit ain't gonna fly.
And when your daughter breaks down because she never dealt with losing her mother, your good old boy shit ain't gonna fly neither. I heard his foot tap, but didn't look at it. We were eye-locked, measuring each other. Thank God I wasn't working for him. He was melting me from the inside out, and I had a feeling it was on purpose.
You play nine ball?
He asked. Sure do.
You win, and I'll go see your hippy-dippy school. I win, and you go see the one on Wilshire.
I don't see why it matters what school I see. It's your decision.
You consulting or not?
I hadn't considered seeing him after that meeting, but he had a point. A real consult on how to manage his daughter would take more than one meeting, and the pay was excellent. But I wasn't here for me. I was here for Blakely.
I stood up.
You break. He handed me a cue.
Ladies first.
I took it and placed the cue ball in the middle of the table, about 6 inches from the headrail and lined with the center diamond. I had a break method shown to me by a hustler I'd dated in Paris. I always sank something in nine ball. I placed the cue on the rail wood and slid it back and forth, bridging high with my left hand.
What the hell is that?
He asked. It's me breaking. I stood straight, getting the power from my hips. Laura says you won't meet any other nannies.
I don't want any other nannies.
I broke. Clack, tick, 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 pop, pop, pop. The three threatened the side but bounced on the cushions. Nothing went in. That was a first. What's the problem with them?
Nicole doesn't like them, or I don't like them.
He set up a 1-3 and sank it. Too hippy-dippy?
I don't like a woman who flirts on an interview to watch my kid.
1-7. Sunk. He was just going to run the one ball all over the table.
I think you're seeing things.
He must have been. We were professionals, every one of us. Laura was damned serious about this sort of thing.
I know women.
1-5. Sunk. He was set up for the 7, and if he played it right, the 9 would be next. I should have made a better break. I have someone, I said. A friend. She's had some bad luck, but she's got experience, and she loves kids.
Really?
He looked up at me from setting up his shot.
Where she worked before?
I didn't pause. Pausing was death. The Trudeaus. He missed the 7. Stood.
I'm not looking for that kind of help.
It's not what you think. I leaned down and set up the 1-9.
It never is. Take your shot.
She's really great. I pocketed the 9. Game over. So is Crossroads. I'll set up the appointment. Please don't use the phrase hippy-dippy in the interview. The school doesn't need your money or the trouble.
Good advice.
He leaned down and retrieved the rack. You really should take my advice on this, and just about everything. I smiled at him and leaned on my cue. He popped the balls back in the nine-ball diamond.
I don't want Josh Trudeau's nanny, even without the extra services. I want you.
This is the kind of thing a single girl wanted to hear from a beautiful man. I was there as a professional. Despite that, I went a little jelly. I tightened my mouth into a line I couldn't let him see.
So does Nicole, he continued, popping the balls into the shape. She asks about the lady in the bathroom all the time.
That's very nice.
I'm not going to pretend I know what she's going through. I don't know too many five-year-olds in the first place. But you do know, or you pretend well enough. Both your parents around?
They live in Fiji.
Where the hell is Fiji?
Far.
Do you visit?
No. I dropped my voice an octave. I hadn't spoken to my parents in years, and I wasn't in the mood to describe the slow tidal drift that separated us. Knowing what's going on with Nicole is a matter of human compassion, not pretending.
And your friend? That human compassion, too? Why are you coming around trying to place her?
I felt trapped, dug in deeper than I should be. I didn't know how it happened, but I never intended to tell him Blakely's problems. Now I felt as if I had to, or lie. I didn't want to lie. She's great, and she's not making the same mistakes again. She was devastated. He lifted the rack off the diamond-shaped configuration of balls. Good rack, I said.
You break. You sink the nine before my turn. I'll hire the two of you. You miss. You come work with Nicole for a month.
Win-win for you.
That's the only way I play.
I set up my shot and broke.
Chapter 6. Kara. The night after I beat Brad at pool, I dreamed of nine ball. I made the shot over and over, and every time it happened the same, I sunk it off the break, which wasn't what had happened the day before. The day before, I sunk a ball on the break and the nine off the four. In the real world, it didn't matter how I won, just that I won. My dream life was more efficient. Nine off the break, and I was naked, because clothes would have gotten in the way of Brad Sinclair's dream body curved over mine as I leaned over the table. He kissed the back of my neck, and his erection pressed against my backside. I didn't turn around, but in the dream I could see his body over me. Every bit of moisture in my body rushed between my legs. I woke up swollen and needy. I took care of my business as efficiently as the dream told the story, turning Brad into someone, anyone else, as I circled my clit with two fingertips. As I got closer to climax and my mind got weaker, Brad reappeared, and I came fast and hard. Fully awake, I promised to do a better job of controlling my fantasies. They were dangerous. Brad Sinclair was off limits. I wasn't going to be a daddy toy. Not in this lifetime. I didn't say that to Blakely as we got our things together for our first day with Nicole. We took separate cars up the hill to the ginormous house. I held my breath the entire way. I didn't know if I could even look at that pool table.
Chapter 7. Brad. She'd beaten me fair and square. Nine off the four. She turned a loss into a win. Nice. I liked that. I also liked her ass.
Don't talk about her ass. No one wants to hear it, not even me.
My buddy Michael, Prince Squeaky Clean. He'd gone from famous kid to famous teen to the guy I met in college. Famous young adult. The guy never had a problem until he met his wife. She'd been a paparazza and a real problem. For a guy who spent his life worrying about what people thought of him, she was the last woman he should be with. He lay back in the sun by my pool. I'm just saying, I said. And I have to say it to someone. My parents are cramping me. Every day's report card, and I got rows of F's and D's. Tell them to go home. They leave today, but believe me, they can wave the report card at me from Arkansas. You taking Nicole to Blueberry's sixth birthday?
the invitation had come that morning. I didn't know what it was at first. It was a cupcake in a basket tied to the bottom of 4 helium balloons. The delivery service had used a drone to float it over the mail chute. Then it followed the housekeeper into the house when she brought the mail in. That's what my mother told me when she handed me the cupcake, and that my dad almost shot it out of the air. Blueberry would love to welcome Nicole to the neighborhood. I was being welcomed, too, somehow to something. I had no idea what. To a world where birthday invitations came on helium balloons and kids had names like Blueberry. Nicole loved the cupcake, and the balloons made her wild. I couldn't say no. You going? I asked Michael. Stupid question. He had 6 kids now. He went to all the kids' shit. What should I get for a present? I'm supposed to bring a present, right? Let the nannies take care of it. They do research, make calls, ask the other nannies what the kid likes, blah, blah, no-brainer. Just don't bring the blonde nanny. I leaned back so I could see into the office off the kitchen. Paula, my right hand and easily half my brain, sat with the 2 nannies. Kara's hair was dark brown. The other one, the one who came with the deal, she was blonde. Blakely. She'd fallen for Josh Trudeau's line. I did the Hollywood math. Blueberry Trudeau was having a birthday,